This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
There's a video installation at the Western Front. It's called Stories from Places and Times, Distantly Close. And Laura Lamb was there to see the exhibit, and she's returned with news from the Western Front. Good morning and welcome, Laura. It's quite a title, Stories from Places and Times, Distantly Close. What does that mean, distantly close?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, distant and close, those are opposites. There can't be distantly close. I think artists are a little bit like the White Queen in Alice in Wonderland. We're very proud of our ability to believe six impossible things before breakfast, or maybe if not believe them, at least hold them in our minds at the same time. And I think that contemporary artists especially are very much in favor of trying to hold very dissonant ideas in your mind at the same time, because we think it's very good for you.
Tell me a little bit more, though, about the show. Who are the artists?
Well, there's two artists. When you enter the gallery, you see a multi-channel video, like with three pictures going at once. And that's by Will Kwan. He also has a wall of clocks in that room that are all set to different times and with the names of places underneath them. And the places, apparently, according to the material that goes along with the show, are places like head offices and toxic waste dumps and other elements of the global economy. But I was particularly interested in, you go into the second room and there's a nice little couch there and you can sit down and watch a single channel video installation, which is called, it's a film called Colony, and it's made by a group of artists called Cinema Suitcase, and they call it an experimental social documentary. And it's about a planned community called Bhatnagar, set up in India by the Czech shoe manufacturer, Bata. And whenever I run into something that's about a utopia or a utopian community, my interest is piqued, because that's one of those impossible ideas that I like to try to hold in my head before breakfast.
I won't ask whether it has that polarity you were earlier talking about, but what
well,
do you...
Well, it does, because the very word utopia, basically it was coined 500 years ago by Thomas More for his book Utopia, and the root of it is no place, but it's a pun also on good place. So it means at the same time good place and no place.
And what do you mean when you describe Bhatnagar as a utopian community?
Well, a utopian community is usually a place where people have tried to actually put into existence some idea of a better society, and they try to bring it into a real place geographically and historically. And I'm always intrigued by these attempts. That's basically, apparently, what Bhatnagar was, in a way.
But I understand the film is called Colony, which hardly sounds utopian.
No, not anymore. But I think to Bata, I mean, it was all that, it was kind of the utopian side of colonization, or the utopian side of capitalism. He was very much a kind of a dreamer who tried to put the first Bata, which he started his business, shoemaking business, back in at the turn of the 20th century. And in the film, Sonia Bata, who is the wife of the current, or daughter, or someone anyway, so she's a descendant, an old woman, is talking about how they used to call all these planned communities or company towns that he built all over the world colonies. And she says, oh, but we don't say that anymore. I think the film is trying to examine this microcosmic colony in a way that might illuminate colonialism in general. And like colonialism, this utopia, if you want to call it that, was very paternalistic. It was very top-down. Abata and his core group of managers were real missionaries of industrialization, a kind of industrialization. Sometimes the American style of that is called Fordism, with the idea that you would mass-produce objects or commodities and pay the workers higher wages, which would provide you with a bunch of consumers who would buy your Model T or your shoes or whatever. So it was kind of a win-win situation. Everybody would prosper in this idea of capitalism. Instead of just exploiting the workers to the max, you would make more money by paying them higher wages. Bata was even more proactive, much more proactive than Ford was, because Ford would leave all the good things that the richer workers were supposed to be able to get in this new vision of capitalism to government. Bata provided them himself: schools, hospitals, parks, community centers, swimming pools, advanced housing. He hired only the best architects to build these communities. And Bata Nagar was just one of dozens, as I said, of these towns that he built all over the world, including one in Canada called Batawa in Ontario.
And how does the film Colony tell the story of Bata Nagar?
Well, the central narrative is that a woman who grew up there returns to Bata Nagar and finds that since China now can produce shoes a lot cheaper, that the town is decaying, it's blighted, the windows are broken, the buildings are falling down, the hospital is about to close. There's only a fraction of the workers there that used to be there, and so on. And I think the most telling line is that she looks back at the audience or the camera and she says, "It didn't look like this. It was beautiful." And she expresses how sad she is and how sad she feels about seeing where she grew up coming to this. There's a sense of melancholy. And that's intercut also. It's not just her. It's intercut with a lot of historical footage about these communities and interviews, for instance, with the Sonia Bata and with other managers and with other people who have things to say about this community.
How widely were the products made at that factory marketed? Were they mainly marketed within a very narrow area, or is it not touched on in the film?
They don't really talk about that too much, but I had got the impression that one of the ideas of building these towns all over the world was so that they would be close to the markets. And that's probably one of the reasons, because of the new kind of capitalism, the globalized capitalism, doesn't depend on that at all. And that's one of the reasons why this town is decaying.
Why is this documentary film showing at an art gallery or artist-run center? Is there something artistic about it, or is it not much different documentary than you might see on television or in a theater?
Yeah, it's not really that different. You can tell it's kind of low budget, it's not different. It is different from a kind of a classic documentary where you have a voiceover telling you exactly what everything's about. But I think a lot of documentaries now have tossed out the voiceover and try to let the story tell itself. It's looser. It's a bit looser than most documentaries you might see, so that you're not quite sure all the time why something is juxtaposed with something else. But the idea, one of the ideas of these documentary makers was that as they say, they would seek to facilitate the self-narration of their subjects rather than constructing their stories for them. And that's an idea I think that artists have been interested in and have led the way on, although it A lot of documentaries are that way now. They try to avoid that paternalism, which is, you know, analogous to the kind of colonialist paternalism that Bata had in setting up these towns exactly the way he thought was the best. And instead, this kind of documentary making tries to empower the subject to speak for themselves.
If this is a looser method of documentary storytelling, what is the result?
Well, sometimes I think that when a filmmaker or an artist tries to use this method, because, you know, coming to realize that when you are coming from an idea, you think you know, for instance, what these communities are about, what's harmful about them, what you don't like about them, and you go out to make a statement like to show perhaps how people were oppressed by something like this. You know what you're going to get, and you make the documentary to get that. But if you give the camera, so to speak, or the voice to your subject, to the people who live in Bata Nagar, for instance, sometimes you get something you don't expect, because often the people who the filmmaker might possibly think of as victims don't see themselves that way at all, or the people who might think of themselves as heroes, it's kind of hard to maintain any kind of stance like that. So either those two ideas are kind of difficult to sustain. And I found in this particular film, they have someone who looks to be an academic or a professor, an Indian, surrounded by his books, talking about how giving a critique, basically a Marxist critique of this utopian idea, saying Bata only did this to maximize profits. It was only a way of improving capitalism. He had no, you know, and so this happens. And so the workers are just abandoned when profits dictate. And, you know, he says that, but it kind of seems hollow because of the way that the film is put together, mostly from the point of view of this woman and her cousin, who is also returning to this town where they lived and worked. And their feelings about Bata Nagar are very warm, very nostalgic, and they're very sad. And, you know, this character, she's very sympathetic. She's, because you're on an intimate level with her, and they're giving her the main voice. She's very intelligent. She seems highly educated, and she feels very much like she's lost something important.
Isn't the filmmaker's choice of an outsider to give the critique and someone who's lived the experience to give a different view, in fact, a subtle way of skewing it, as though they're trying to let the person tell their story, but selected one?
Yeah, well, you can't really ever give up your authority as an artist, you know? I mean, perhaps. Maybe that's one of the things that comes forward in a documentary like this. One thing they did that was very funny was, or very very odd, was that they have inserted a bit of a busker, and, you know, I don't know where he is, maybe in the London subway or something, and suddenly there's this busker singing "Let It Be" by the Beatles, and you know, I couldn't help but thinking, like, knowing that these filmmakers were trying to make a critical statement, and knowing that their criticism was maybe being undercut a little bit by their choice, and then sticking in this, you know, this kind of smarmy song, you know, probably the song that rubs activists the wrong way most of any Beatles song that was ever written, you know, "In Times of Trouble," "Mother Mary," what's that doing in there? So, yeah, I don't know. Like I say, it's loose, and it lets the audience in a little bit more to try to figure out what is going on, what can we draw from this.
So what did you bring from this exploration of globalization within in an art context?
Well, I wondered maybe if this melancholy, there was a bit of a feeling of melancholy to the whole show. And I wondered if that's maybe one of the effects of trying to hold many opposing ideas in your mind at once, you know, before breakfast or any time, you know, these impossible things like being distantly close or letting, trying to make a critical statement but letting it be undercut by things that just happen. If that's sort of one of the emotional results of that kind of artistic enterprise.
Well, thanks for coming in again, Laura.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks, Mark.
I've been talking with Laura Lamb about the exhibition Stories from Places and Times, Distantly Close. It's a video installation. It's on at the Western Front, and it will continue there until January 16th.